KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for supporting the program financially, if you can. You know the drainage pipes you sometimes see sticking out from underneath the road? They're called culverts, and they're creating a division between some Washington tribes and the state attorney general, Bob Ferguson. We're going to talk about that story and some others with my next guests. Jossie Ross, author, speaker, storyteller, member of the Blackfeet Nation. Good to see you again, Jossie.
It's always good to see you.
Colleen Echohawk Hayashi, she's Pawnee, Athabascan, executive director of the Chief Seattle Club and a KUOW board member. Thank you for your pledge of support right now, KUOW.org. Welcome, Colleen.
Very good. Yes, I'm glad to be here. Thanks, Bill.
So before we get to courts and drain pipes, we were just asking a moment ago, did you hear us talking about whether social media is ruining the outdoors or not? Just curious what you thought, Jossie.
No, pollution, acidification, and climate change is ruining the outdoors.
Oh.
Social media is just chronicling it.
Well, what about the, you don't mind the selfies or the Bluetooth speakers blaring people's chosen tunes?
You know, that's not a function of social media. that's a function of people.
Human beings.
Yeah, of human beings, right. who want to, you know, catalog a particular moment and really feel a need to use a filter. And take a picture at any place they are. I'd say that, you know, that says more about the human psyche than it does about social media.
Well, and we can be curious and be thinking about how we respond to our people around us, right? Like, we have a responsibility to be kind to people around us. If we see someone around us who is enjoying a hike, then we shouldn't be blaring our music. We shouldn't be talking super loud and be respectful of people. But I happen to enjoy a little social media selfie with my kids when we're out on a hike and
hanging out.
You know, it's chronicalizing our time together, and that's good. It's important.
What makes a good outdoor selfie?
A beautiful scenery, of course, and two beautiful kids. Beautiful native kids filtered. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I think that there's, you know, it's the argument about alcohol. It's the argument about any inanimate object. Is that thing bad? No, of course not. It's something that human beings in different situations use, good or bad. And, you know, you could be sort of an ass with the, you know, with selfies in the same way that you can be with alcohol in a bar. And it could be used for good purposes as well. Man, that's a beautiful picture. Guess what? Seattle looks completely different than it did 20 years ago. I'm glad somebody took that picture.
Yeah. And I'll say, too, that when I'm out there with my kids, I think it's my responsibility to acknowledge the land, acknowledge the people around me, the tribal people's lands that we're on. So I'll tend to, like, you know, hashtag Muckleshoot, hashtag Suquamish, and recognize that we're on tribal lands, that we have a responsibility to these lands to treat them with respect. And I try to teach my kids that as well. So, you know, try to give a shout out to the tribal communities around us through social media.
Yeah, more on social media.
Mm-hmm.
More, you have that. We have that chance now. Sounds like you have a favorite filter, Jossie. You care a lot about which filter. What's the best?
I'm not really a filter guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wish I was. I might get a better response on social media, but yeah, I might, you know, clear
think
up
about
a
Rise. So that's
few pores.
Yeah.
But nah, I don't know the filter game that well.
Okay, let's talk about some other things. Seattle search for a new police chief. Echohawk, there, as you know, there's been debate, there's been some anger about the search for Seattle's new police chief. Mm-hmm. The interim chief, Carmen Best, was on a list of five semifinalists. A group of mayor's advisors narrowed that to three people, and the interim chief didn't make the cut. You helped lead the search, so why was Carmen Best left off the list?
Well, I happen to just be a part of the process where we push five people through. So I can't answer that. But I do know that we have an amazing opportunity ahead of us in our city. I work closely with officers every day in the work that we do at the Chief Seattle Club. And I know that we have some amazing officers out there who believe in community policing and do a good job of it. And we have a long ways to go. And I think we have an opportunity now to truly engage in community policing, to be considering Sue Rohr's statement of guardian versus warrior, and truly find compassionate, empathetic officers who are going to continue to provide community policing that is excellent for all people, including our homeless community.
Well, one more question on the search, Colleen, is that, as you know, a lot of community groups, including the officers union, believe that Carmen Best was eliminated in a way that to them seems arbitrary and unaccountable. Mm-hmm. You were deep in that process. What,
you know,
can you
I'll
tell
just say again that I was part of the committee that pushed people through to that five. Mm-hmm. That was my responsibility. And then after that, it went on to the mayor's office.
Jossie, do you Do you have anything to say, first of all, about how the search process, anything about how it was handled?
No, because I really don't know that much about it. I know that there's been appropriately some extra questions about anytime a woman and anytime a black woman is eliminated from that process, because it's a fair question. There's a really long, ugly history of, you know, why is this person eliminated relative to this other person? That said, I don't know the answers to that substantively, so I can't say.
What do you want from the next police chief, Jossie?
I would like transparency. I would like more community policing. A vested interest in the development development of community. And I also think it's important that that police chief try to navigate as best they can that relationship. It's a really, really important relationship between the police guild and the community and accountability with the police department. Because in my estimation, the police guild has had substantive influence as opposed to simply labor influence on the police department. I think that's an inappropriate relationship.
What would be a sign of success? We nailed it with this police chief. This is what we deserve. This is the police chief we deserve.
Well, I think that the chief of police that I'm looking forward is someone who is truly engaged with the community, as mm-hmm. Jossie said, is transparent, and is someone that will continue to carry forward the reforms that we continue to see and need.
Could you imagine an example of how you would know that they have that those qualities? What would be an action that you
want? I think that we have to have a chief of police who's willing to take action when there's incidences that happen that are negative against a community. I'm dealing with a situation right now where we believe that there's potential brutality that happened against one of our relatives who's experiencing homelessness. And I want to see quick response from our chief of police. I want to see someone who says those kind of actions are unquestionably negative and wrong, and we will take action on behalf of our most vulnerable citizens.
Speaking of vulnerable citizens,
Bill, just real quick,
yes.
I think that Colleen, as usual, nails it, that ultimately, I think there's an understanding, because you're talking about human error, you're talking about human beings, bad things are going to happen. There's going to be bad incidents. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that most people, even the people who are most vocal wanting police reform, are saying there should be no bad incidents. But there should be accountability, and yes. There should be responsiveness as opposed to excuses mm-hmm. and manipulations when those bad things happen. And I think—
Are you saying you've seen excuses and manipulations in this, in how recent a past? Like, what are you complaining of?
I think that if you look at inherent within the inquest process, for example, mm-hmm. that's a process that starts with the presumption that the police officer did something absolutely right, as opposed to an objective process that says, well, let's contemplate the notion that this police officer might have done something wrong. And so structurally, there's things there that give the presumption of propriety, as opposed to we're going to just see what the proper outcome is.
We were talking of vulnerable citizens. King County released its annual one-night count of homeless people, and the proportion of Native people counted dropped by half, which sounds like good news. Colleen, why is it not good news?
Well, it's not good news because it's not accurate. And I saw the report and was really disappointed, because I know that in my own agency that we have seen a huge increase of Native people who are experiencing homelessness. My agency is the organization that has many, many Native people who come to it, along with other organizations in our city. And so I was disappointed. And then I started looking at some of the methodology and thinking about how it was set up really not to serve the Native community. So I've been working closely with All Home and King County to think about how we do that methodology in the future. We also have looked at other databases and seen that in the past, since January of 2018, we have seen about a 16% increase of Native people in our homeless management information system.
Why would Native people be undercounted?
Well, they didn't come to our agency. So what we know is that Native people tend to want to come to their family, want to come to our organizations that are serving them as family and relatives. And so none of the agencies were surveyed, aside from one agency that doesn't serve a huge volume of people.
And Jossie, why is that as a category? Why is that important? Homeless people who are Native.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, Chief Seattle Club. Shout out Chief Seattle Club. I know that KUOW is raising money. Chief Seattle Club needs money too. But for funding purposes, On a per head, per capita basis, it's important that we get these numbers right. Number two, in regards to services, so you can see, because there's other funding mechanisms as well. So when you're talking about, you know, federal government funding public schools, we get a separate bucket of money for those public schools. And it's important that those native students, so there's a lot of native children who are currently living on the streets. That's a matter of data. And those folks need those programs that are specifically designated for them as well. So funding mechanisms, identifying, and then just also there's just a larger problem of native invisibility.
Right.
And so this kind of plays into the, you know, where you were talking about with Bob Ferguson and a lot of other legislators and a lot of people in general who just don't acknowledge native people as human beings and see us as autonomous, something that's different from, you know, when we talk about race, well, it's different than black, it's different than white, it's different than Latinx, and it's its own thing. And please don't subsume us into other groups.
Will you explain that? The state attorney general has sued the Trump administration dozens of times, but you wrote that in one sense, Ferguson's not different from Trump. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that's a mischaracterization of what I wrote.
Oh.
I didn't say that he wasn't the same. I mean, he wasn't different. I said that in regards to his approach to treaty rights.
Yeah, I said in one sense.
No,
what,
I understand.
What sense was that?
In regards to treaty rights, his stance, and I use the words actually that he was racist. See, a lot of times because we talked about the complications and the invisibility of Native people, we refuse to point out anti-Native behavior is racist. You know, we're not going to give
you explain the brief of the culverts issue for people who are
yeah,
up
absolutely.
On this.
And so there were many treaties that were entered into you know 29 federally recognized tribes in Washington State. Most of those treaties had a right to fish in common with every other citizen of the state of Washington. Implicit in that, and as a matter of jurisprudence at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they said that not only does that you have a right to fish, but you also have a right to, while there's fish, while you're fishing, that there be fish there. And so when the state does actions that are antagonistic and kill fish, the state is then liable for that behavior. And so one of the behaviors, one of the things that they did was they created these culverts that kill fish. That's a matter of data. And they said, well, no, you got to fix those culverts. You got to put culverts in that actually don't kill fish.
They keep fish from getting where they need to be.
That's right.
But Ferguson has said that he doesn't want Washington State to be on the hook for fixing all these at great cost, all these
yes,
culverts.
Absolutely. It against the council of Jay Inslee, against the counselor of public lands, against Dow Constantine, who, you know, is problematic for a lot of reasons, but he's on the right side on this. He said, no, this isn't the right answer. He said, we got to sue these tribes so that in a way, Bill, that we don't have to honor fully these treaty rights, because the brief that he submitted to the Supreme Court is actually incredibly aggressive, incredibly condescending to treaty rights. And I suggest that everybody read that. So the characterization is absolutely correct that he is doing something antagonistic to treaty rights, but that's something that you can't, and it's inextricably linked to Native people, those treaty rights. You can't separate us from it.
And we regularly have State Attorney General Bob Ferguson in to talk about his various lawsuits, and there are many. So we'll have him in and let him say his piece personally about that. That's our time for now, talking with Jossie Ross, speaker, storyteller, author of How to Say I Love You in Indian.
How do you say?
How do you say I love you in Indian?
You say I love you, Bill.
Oh, nice. I like that. Yeah. Colleen Echo Hakayashi, Executive Director of the Chief Seattle Club, KUOW board member. Good to see you again. Thank you,
Great
Colleen.
Great to see you. Thank you, Bill.
The record on KUOW Seattle.